Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Friday, May the 13th. And welcome to our commentary. Friday the 13th, I don't know. Am I supposed to be scared? I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff. I think there was a movie by that name. And I don't know whether the movie started this or whether this is a tradition that goes back to the old days. I really don't know what the Friday 13th is all about. But I know that many people get into it. So I hope that Friday 13th or that my Friday 13th commentary, well, I hope I get it right on Friday the 13th. Otherwise, I guess I'll blame it on Friday the 13th. Let me begin with an article that I read today that I will be linking to that article on my Saturday Morning Post. And that has to do with abortion and voters. You may remember the name of Scott Rasmussen. Scott Rasmussen was the man who founded Rasmussen Reports, one of the most, one of the best, really, of the polling services or polling services, whatever they call themselves, around. They were very good. And one of the reasons that they were very good is because they would use likely voters. You know, a lot of times when you see these polls, it'll say 1,000 all adults or registered voters. But in the case of Rasmussen, they always used likely voters. And likely voters is a much better measurement because you're talking to people who have voted and who are likely to vote. And that tends to give you a more, perhaps a closer to reality view of what is going to happen in the election. And that's one of the reasons, frankly, why Rasmussen got such a good reputation. Well, Scott left the company a few years ago. I don't know whether he sold it, but he's no longer associated with Rasmussen Reports. He sort of created his own news agency, and he will, from time to time, he will do a poll, and then from time to time, he will use that polling information to write an article. And his latest one is really fascinating because he's arguing that the American people actually want to have something to say about abortion. In other words, if you ask people, do you want something to say? Do you want to be able to say something about abortion, meaning you want to be able to express your opinions about abortion through your state legislatures? A lot of people say, yes, absolutely. And of course, the problem here is one of the biggest criticisms of Roe v. Wade was that the opinion was made in 1973, and the American people were sort of taken out of the equation. Americans never had an opportunity to say, well, we believe this or we believe that. No, it was simply an opinion that sat there for all these years, and apparently it couldn't be challenged. Well, finally, it is, and it looks very likely that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned, and in that case, abortion is going to go back to the voters. And again, according to Scott, and I think he's exactly right, I think voters want the choice. Voters want the opportunity to express themselves through their legislatures and say, we want this or we don't want this. And I think that that's the part, and Scott is exactly right, that's the part that many of the so-called experts are missing, that they're asking questions. They're sort of asking, you know, Washington-based questions. And I think a lot of the public is saying, no, 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 we want something to say on abortion. We want to have a choice on abortion. So if you live in a liberal state, then you'll have a more liberal abortion policy. If you live in a more conservative place like Texas, then you're going to have a more conservative policy. But voters want something to say about the future of abortion. And I think Scott is exactly right. I think he's exactly right. And a lot of the conventional wisdom, I think, is misreading how the country actually feels about abortion. I think in his article, he says that 65% of the American people want their own choice. They want to be able to choose voters. I mean, they want to be able to choose legislators who will then write a policy that they will have some input in with respect to abortion. I think Scott is exactly right. And that is what you're going to get. That is exactly what you're going to get. If you overturn Roe v. Wade, you're going to have 50 different states with 50 different approaches. Now, a lot of them are going to be the same. A lot of the blue states are going to have their own form of Roe v. Wade with unconditional abortion. But then some of the red states, I think, will have differences. Some states may be 15 weeks, other states may be 10 weeks, other states like Texas are going to be based on the heartbeats of the baby. So there's going to be all kinds of variety. But at least whatever comes out is going to be the result of people acting through their legislatures and choosing an abortion solution. And I think Scott Rasmussen is 100% on this. And by the way, as I mentioned, I have a post coming out Saturday morning about this, and I'm linking to Scott's article. So I hope you check it out Saturday morning. Same place that you see these videos, just wait until Saturday morning to read that post. Speaking of American Thinker Post, I had one that was published on Friday, and that has to do with what happened in the U.S. Senate on Thursday, where an abortion vote went down 51-49. And the reason it went down 51-49, for those of you who've been following the story, you know that Senator Manchin of West Virginia voted against his party and voted against the proposal that was on the floor. So the end result was 51 no, 49 yes. So it did not break out of the Senate. But Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts came out in a very critical way and said that a minority should not be telling a majority what to do. A minority shouldn't be running the country, that the majority should be the one governing. Somebody needs to explain to Senator Warren that there was the majority on that vote, and the majority was against the abortion bill, 51-49. So the post that I have over at the American Thinker, the title of that post is Senator Warren, 49 is not a majority. That's exactly right. A majority of senators voted against that bill. It was a small minority, I understand, 51, but that's a majority. 51 voted against that bill. It was a terrible bill, frankly, absolutely horrible bill. And that's why they couldn't get, you know, pro-choice Republicans like Susan Collins or the lady Murkowski up in Alaska. You know, they couldn't get those senators because it was a very radical bill. And even pro-choice Republicans like those two ladies would not support it. It was a complete disaster, that bill. And thanks to Senator Manchin from West Virginia, it didn't get out of the Senate floor. Well, let's talk a little bit about this baby formula going on in the country right now. You know, I mentioned yesterday that I didn't want to politicize this thing because it's a complicated story. It's not, you know, one way or the other. But it does appear right now that back in February, the administration should have known that this was coming, because there was a plant that produces these formulas that went down through a variety of reasons that we can get on another show. But that plant obviously brought down production, and the FDA knew this because the FDA had something to do with shutting down the plant. And the administration should have known. The Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Transportation should have gone to the president and say, Mr. President, we got a problem here. This is going to be a big problem in a couple of months if mothers cannot buy formula for their babies. But again, for whatever reason, they didn't act on it. Now, of course, they're in a state of panic because you have, you know, thousands, if not millions of young mothers out there about ready to explode. And, you know, the administration, it seems like they don't want to be creative. You know, the first thing they should have done back in February or March is they should have contacted other countries and say, look, we're going to have this problem. Let's begin the process of bringing formula from other countries so that we're not caught in this situation. Well, they didn't do that. They didn't do that. Again, we're in the situation we're in right now because of a lack of planning, a lack of organization. Now, politically speaking, though, it's very bad for President Biden because it reinforces what is a growing trend in the country, that the job is too big for him, that he cannot handle this job, that he cannot run the government. This is the same thing that happened to President Carter. For those of you who remember the last 12 months of the Carter presidency, the perception in the country was the job is too big for President Carter, so he didn't get reelected. He lost to then Governor Ronald Reagan, who objective of, I can do this, I can run the government. And of course, Reagan turned out to be one of the best and most successful and most popular presidents. And a lot of it had to do with the confidence. And I would argue a lot of it had to do with the people that he surrounded himself with. One of the problems, and we've said it before, with the Biden administration is that a lot of people in this cabinet were selected because of identity politics rather than because they had any experience in the field that they're in. You take, for example, the Secretary of Transportation. He doesn't have any experience when it comes to transportation. You take the Secretary of Commerce. She doesn't have any experience when it comes to commerce. She was the governor of Rhode Island, I think, a state that is not exactly setting the world on fire when it comes to job growth. So a lot of people were put in positions. Secretary of Energy had no experience when it comes to energy. A lot of people were put in jobs just to check identity politics boxes. And I think we're beginning to realize right now that we have a bunch of incompetent people in this administration. It shows up in situations like this where you don't have anybody in the administration who went up to the president and say, Mr. President, we got a problem here and you better know it because we may have to act in an emergency fashion. It's too late now. It's too late now. And I think that once again, we see that this is a very incompetent administration. Well, on this day in 1981, I remember this day quite well. I was in Mexico City when this happened. I don't remember exactly. I think I was sitting in my office back then, and I get a phone call from my mother saying that Pope John Paul II had been shot in Rome. It was a shock. You know, you just didn't expect these things to happen. And of course, you had John Lennon, who was killed in December of 1980. You had President Reagan, who was shot, I think, in, was it April of 1981? And now you have the Pope a few weeks later. So it was just a shocking type of situation. And, you know, I couldn't believe it. Obviously, the Pope made it. He survived. He went on to have a very successful career as a pope. I've always said that he was the master of retail politics, even though, of course, he's a pope. But he knew how to travel. He knew how to reach people. He was a master of communications. He had that I think was so important for a pope. So John Paul II, we nearly lost him on this day in 1981. And I remember that day as if it was yesterday because it was a real shocking moment for me as a Catholic, not just as a Catholic, but as an admirer of John Paul II. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.